So 41 years of tyranny, 7 months of an armed uprising assisted by NATO in an air campaign that officially came to an end last night, and a few hours at the hands of Libyan rebels, and Muammar Gaddafi entered the brutal dustbin of history reserved for despots and absolute monarchs whose time has come. And perhaps taken most by surprise, listen to the voice of Gaddafi himself.
No, no one against us. Against me for what? They love me, all my people with me. They love me all. They will die to protect me and my people.
In the end, it would be Gaddafi who died. And, of course, that's him speaking in the beginning of the uprising. Joining us now is John Lee Anderson, who spent a lot of time in Libya, most recently at the end of August through about mid-September. He's a staff writer at The New Yorker. And, John, first of all, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
As someone, I'm great. And someone who's observed this last days of dictators, both from the historical perspective and, you know, right up close in your own reporting, where do you think Muammar Gaddafi stands in the pantheon of delusion and sort of misguided decisions that, you know, is the end often of dictators like Muammar Gaddafi?
That's true. In the pantheon of delusion, quite far up there. He was he regarded himself in the early days when he came into power as a young officer. He was cut in the cloth of Gamal Abdel Nasser, the, you know, very mid-20th century style third world revolutionary, anti-imperialist, anti-colonialist. And he morphed over the years from someone who stood up for indigenous rights and sort of Arab redemption. You know, there wasn't much of a country before Libya. It was a country that had been humiliated by colonial occupation at the hands of the Italians and so on. And he morphed into this kind of clownish, ranting figure who supported, he became a kind of political contrarian, you know, whose oil wealth protected him from punishment. And the fact, it seems to me that Gaddafi, you know, he made some serious missteps, much as did Saddam Hussein. And in both cases, well, in Saddam Hussein's case, it ultimately cost him his power and his life. In Gaddafi's case, paradoxically, it didn't. You know, he arguably, most of us believe that he ordered the Lockerbie bombing in 1989, in which 270 people were killed, including 189 Americans. And he was put under sanctions, became a pariah state after that. But then in his makeover, beginning in 2003, when he announced that he had weapons of mass destruction but wanted to hand them over in return for rehabilitation, he was embraced. He was taken back into the warm embrace of the West. And so until the eve of this year's revolution, you know, Americans, Brits, French, and everybody else was doing money, was doing business hand over fist with him.
That's amazing.
And so, you know.
Let me remind people they can read about your experience in covering folks like this in The New Yorker. It's an article called King of Kings, The Last Days of Muammar Gaddafi. And in that article, you're really grasping for, Gaddafi's place in history. And I'm reminded of Nicolae Ceaușescu, who I covered in Romania, who didn't really understand till the end that he was even disliked. And then you use the phrase King of Kings, which reminds me of Kropotkin's incredible profile of the end of Haile Selassie in Ethiopia. Where do you think Gaddafi stands in comparison with those guys?
Well, I mean, again, I think, you know, Gaddafi was sort of a one-off. He was a media-centric figure. He was both of the past age of dictatorship and of this age. But in the sense that he was delusional and actually seems to have believed that his people loved him, as we heard, in that great clip that you played, which was in an interview with Christian Amanpour at the very beginning, a few days after the revolt began. And from all one can piece together and all I was able to piece together, he seems to have remained in that state to the very end. We saw him in those horrific videos being killed, being brutalized and killed, and he had a face of confusion. And what people said around him, including the men who were involved in that brutalization, said was that his first words when he was dragged out of that sewage pipe, that drainage pipe, was, "What's going on? What's wrong?" You know, in a state of sort of confusion, as if he thought that they were still his people, and that somehow they would see his point of view.
You know, John.
There's been a number of other.
John Lee Anderson is a staff writer at The New Yorker, and his piece is called King of Kings, The Last Days of Muammar Gaddafi. Equally interesting to the state of mind of Muammar Gaddafi and the other dictators like Saddam that you have watched their decline and fall is the reaction of their people. The people who rise up against them, you find parallels in the way that people behave when the reign is finally over.
Well, that's true. I mean, of course, there's the celebration, but more to the point, I think, and what you're getting at is the fact that victimization is not a virtue. People who've been brutalized for a long time, and Gaddafi's reign was brutal, but in a kind of random way. You can't compare him to Saddam or Stalin. He was bad, but he didn't commit mass murder on that great a scale. It was a kind of schizophrenic violence. It became endemic. He had a police state and so on, but it was also a Mediterranean culture, and so it wasn't as manifold as, say, the East German security state. There were gaps, and somehow in keeping with this notion of a guy we have, who on the one hand was somehow amusing, even attractive to some people, and on the other hand, buffoonish and venal. But I think what we've seen with his death is a warning that, you know, after all, what does he leave behind in Libya? A kind of void, 42 years in which there has been no democratic give and take. There's been no culture of debate or exchange of ideas. And so you see people, his enemies, the people that have overthrown him, behaving in much the same way as he and his secret police did for so many years, and certainly in the last year.
And you've
also
got international agencies. You described the CIA's cozy relationship with Muammar Gaddafi over many, many years. In a sense, the people that want to deal with the new Libya may find themselves missing the simplicity of dealing with one man.
Well, that's absolutely right. I think, you know, it's a cautionary tale, Libya, and we should henceforth, if only our foreign policies could sometimes be based on moral virtue rather than self-interest, it would be a great thing.
Well, and that, of course, is the challenge, because we're going to have to encourage the democratic state in Libya, even if it is a challenge, and develop the very ambiguous institutions that we didn't have when we could deal just with one person. What do you think the chance of that is?
I'm cautiously pessimistic. I worry about the future in Libya. I hope it comes off, but I think there's quite a bit stacked against it.
John Lee Anderson, staff writer at The New Yorker. Read his piece called The King of Kings, The Last Days of Muammar Gaddafi in this week's edition of The New Yorker. Thanks, John.
Thank you.